Jeff Charlotte is an author, educator, and journalist who brings both insight and empathy to his work. Earlier this year, Jeff was with us to discuss his experiences while covering a series of Donald Trump rallies. I'm very happy to welcome back to State of Belief Radio, Jeff Charlotte. Jeff, thanks for being with us again.
Well, and thanks. Thanks for having me back. Great to be with you as always.
When you think back to the Trump fans that you met at those rallies earlier this year, how do you imagine they've been affected by the twists and turns of this election since then?
I mean, one of the fascinating things is a lot of them, I imagine, and from sort of monitoring these things, have not been affected much at all. When the political ideology is based on a rejection of mainstream media, and I don't want to do that liberal thing where we say, oh, they're just crazy, they live in their own bubble. They sort of have a legitimate critique of mainstream media, but they don't have a good treatment plan. They don't understand where else they can get information. So they just sort of reject it all. And there's quite a few of them, as we know, out there who actually believe Trump is going to win. They think that the polls are skewed and so on. So there's a lot of them out there still feeling good.
So you don't see them being affected in any substantive way by all of the negative stories about the candidates that have been in the headlines?
The hardcore, and those were the ones that I was interested in most and sort of trying to understand. No, I don't think so. And we see this if you follow the sort of the Trump Twitter sphere and so on. You know, there's a spectrum of those who are gleeful about the Trump's disgusting remarks about women and so on. Some of them just think that's terrific. Most of them don't think it's terrific, but also either sort of don't believe it or discard it or think that they're taking the high road by saying, yeah, those remarks are horrible, but I'm not electing a polite man. I'm electing a strong man to be president, and his job is not to be nice to actresses. His job is to, you know, make these great deals and build this wall. And for your listeners who don't know where I'm coming from, I'm just trying to represent that point of view. But I think that is a reasoned point of view, and that's one of the things that liberals, I worry, sometimes have a hard time understanding, that those Trump supporters, we don't have 40% of the country that's insane. We have 40% of the country that is following a very different path to its conclusions.
That is so very important. One of the things that I've had to deal with all of my life, because I grew up in a fundamentalist congregation and knew very well the most conservative people and thoughts in the Southern Baptist Convention. And yet I couldn't just write off those people, because there is a mindset that many people don't understand, but there is a mindset that allows those people to feel good about being attacked, and to feel even more right than ever when almost everyone else is against them.
Well, absolutely. There's a way in which Trump has only become a better candidate for some of his followers. The more scandals emerge, the more he becomes an implausible president, the more he becomes the message that a lot of them want to send, mm-hmm. which is a middle finger to everybody,
that's right.
Which is to say, we don't think the Republican Party has our backs any more than the Democratic Party. We're not electing a president. We're electing a guy that tells you how little we feel that you have disdain for us. Let us show how deeply we disdain you. So the worse Trump becomes, the more an expression of that disdain he is. I see that even where I am in Vermont, which you wouldn't expect to find Trump followers, but there certainly are. A fellow describing in our local paper, he'd been an Obama voter. Obamacare had not worked well for him, as it doesn't for some very lower income people. And he decided he was voting for Trump because Trump was unwrestling. He's not because he's stupid. He understood what he was saying, that it was ridiculous and over the top. He says, you know what? I've made my reasoned decisions in the past. They haven't helped me. Wrestling is as good a criteria as anything I'm going to get from the media. I'm voting for Trump. And that's how those voters endure.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, I'm interested in how you would expect these people to react to the members of the GOP establishment who have kind of distance themselves from Trump.
I have to say I was slower to believe that we were seeing the crack up of the Republican Party than others, because I never thought that Trump was actually that much of an outlier. He was an outlier in style, not in substance, basically. And as we know, that quite a lot of Republicans actually support that. But I think at this point, we are seeing some foolish politics by the Republican Party. I mean, they're bad political tactics. I think it is fair to anticipate, and especially when we look at the sort of the divisions within religious conservatism, a very shattered party, a very broken party. That fellow who's voting for Trump because of wrestling, he's a Vermonter, so he's not in New Hampshire, but if he was right across the border, he would not be voting for our Republican Senator, Kelly Ayotte. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be voting for the establishment Republicans who have said goodbye to Trump. And the media has tended to focus on those establishment Republicans who said they won't vote for Trump without sort of doing the basic math, which is that there are more Republicans who won't vote establishment now.
Mm-hmm. Suppose Hillary Clinton wins the presidency next month. How worried would you be about the reactions from Trump voters?
For once in my life, I'm optimistic, Welton. I really am. I think there's a very good chance now that, obviously, that it's very likely that Hillary will win and will be dealing with a very shattered Republican Party, probably a Democratic Senate, possibly even, you know, a Democratic House. And I think the main political action in the United States for the first time is going to mirror some of what we've seen in Western Europe, where the main divide is not between the far right and a kind of sort of liberal centrism, but it's going to be between the center right, which is represented by the Clinton wing of the Democratic Party, and a real left represented by the Elizabeth Warrens, the Feingolds, the Sanders, and more to come. And I think those will be the real debates. I think there's a lot of concern about poll watchers and so on. One thing I have learned about the popular right is that it is unfortunately good at producing a few very dangerous individuals, and it is very bad at acting on mass movements. And we've seen that. There's no registration for the poll watchers. Again and again, we saw at the Republican convention there was no violence. I think it's worth remembering that a lot of Trump supporters are people with jobs. They have to go work their shift. They're not going to suddenly quit their job and go and say, oh, now I'm going to become a Trump revolutionary. We see the alt-right. The alt-right, for all its dangers, and they're real, and the dangers of its speech are real, but they do tend to be more talk than action. And so I don't think that we are veering toward a Timothy McVeigh moment. I think we are veering toward a moment where the energy, the conflict, the tension, the excitement is going to be a little bit like that of 2011 with the Occupy movement and the Democratic Party and the Republicans and the conservatives off in the wings.
What happens if Trump wins the presidency?
Then we're in terrible shape. I agree with everybody else. And I think if Trump wins the presidency, short of some kind of disaster happening, right, Hillary, God forbid, collapses, really collapses this time or something like this, and we're all sitting there scratching our heads and saying, what happened? How did he win? Then you have the double whammy of a man who has decided to veer ever closer to fascism as our president-elect, and his non-supporters, the rest of us, many of whom I think are a little bit better at mobilizing and being active, and also have reason to question what the heck just happened if Hillary goes from, you know, anywhere between 6 to 10 points ahead to losing. It could happen, and people should recognize, and all of us who are now have all become avid poll watchers, and so this is probably not telling anyone any news, you know, that some of those swing states are not as certain as they seem. And there's a tendency, if one breaks one way, that's in some way an indicator that many others will break that way. That said, it's a distant possibility. If Trump becomes president, though, all bets are off, and we now have I've never used the word fascist about an American politician before, but I think that's correct in his case.
You wrote such good material on the family and the dynamics of what goes on in the minds and in the behavior of the people who identify with the family. How would you compare the people you wrote about in the family and the people that we're talking about today who are supporters of Donald Trump?
I mean, we're really looking at the split. I mean, when I wrote about the family or the fellowship, the folks who organize a national prayer breakfast, this sort of elite fundamentalist group that focuses on politicians, I was really interested in this phenomena that I thought had been overlooked of a kind of elite upper-class fundamentalism at odds with what we tend to assume about the kind of the popular and maybe populist, at least middle-class or working-class fundamentalism. And I think much of the success of the right in the last, you know, decades has been the fact that those two movements, the elites and the popular front, were fairly intertwined. So, you know, you had all the mega church energy going into electing some politicians who, in their political and religious beliefs, did not actually represent the people in those mega churches. And now suddenly we're seeing that crack up on every front. We're seeing it in the secular right. We're seeing, you know, guys like Senator John Thune of South Dakota, who's if you take as a bellwether, as a family politician. He's a member of the family. And he is the guy who waited to endorse Trump, then endorsed Trump, then unendorsed Trump, then re-endorsed Trump. This guy doesn't know what he's doing. He will probably, you know, his electoral fate is fine there in South Dakota. But were he anywhere else, he would be one of these elites who is suddenly exposed to his popular supporters as an elite, as a guy who doesn't understand them, as a guy who doesn't represent them, and as a guy they don't think needs to be in office. And I think that will happen elsewhere. I think it is a trying time for elite conservatives. That's why they have been some of the most vituperative critics of Trump come from the elite conservative corners. It's not principle. It's them recognizing they've had this wonderful fat cushion of the popular front for a long time, and they don't have it anymore.
What have you been thinking and writing regarding the big picture of our democracy during these tumultuous months?
I'm optimistic. I think if we want to look at a very thin silver lining of Trumpism, it has been to sort of a little bit rend the kind of consensus around mainstream media power. You know, this is where I say that a lot of those conservatives, I think their diagnosis that there's something wrong with these media institutions, that the media institutions serve a Washington consensus, that they're correct in. Their prognosis and their treatment plan is where they go very far awry. But the danger now is that Trump maybe normalizes some things on the right. You know, he makes room for a slightly less vulgar figure. But the other danger is that he normalizes some things within centrist liberalism, and the reality that Clinton, who I'd be right up front, I'm voting for. I live in Vermont, and I'm voting for her because I want her to win it by a big margin. That doesn't mean that in any other election, a lot of these issues around her pension for secrecy, I've reported on her and her religious commitments and her political commitments in the past. Those should have been a much, much bigger story. So our sense of democracy, if it's normalizing those two aspects, is bad. But I think I'm optimistic because I think the reality is everything is topsy-turvy. Everything is up in the air. And I think where it's going to land after election is with our new centrist or even center-right president and a really revitalized left movement, much bigger than what we saw in 2011 with Occupy. That for the first time, we always talk about this with Democrats, right? You know, the progressives are going to hold their feet to the fire. I think that might actually happen this time. So I feel like our democracy might come out of this healthier than it was when Trumpism first infected the system.
Jeff Charlotte is an investigative journalist and the author of several best-selling books with a focus on exposing the true driving forces behind our culture and politics. His latest is Radiant Truths, Essential Dispatches, Reports, Confessions, and Other Essays on American Belief. Jeff is Associate Professor of Creative Writing at Dartmouth College. Jeff, I really appreciate you being willing to apply your experience and insights to this very important subject. I really needed to hear you today, because it's been a while since I have felt as optimistic as you do, and to hear that kind of commentary from someone who knows what they're talking about. So thanks so much for being with us again on State of Belief Radio. It's always great to have you.
Thank you, Alan. It's great to be with you.